Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is The Bald-Faced Truth.
We were talking about Bo Jackson off the top of the show today. It's just 30 years ago that Bo knows all that happened. Can you imagine having seen Bo Jackson in the combine? Bo Jackson ran a 4.1340 in the combine. Ridiculous. At 225 pounds. Dane Brugler with us, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. How are you, man?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing all right. The combine has become like it's a thing. It's a destination. It's not just a, hey, let's get some data here and then we draft the players. Do you geek out on the combine and the times, or what are you looking at when you go into this?
Well, first and foremost, the reason the combine was invented was for the medicals. One neutral site where all the players could go and all the teams could get the medical information. So, you know, players aren't going from city to city getting the same medical evaluation. That's why the combine was created back in the early 80s. And then over the years, you know, it's really evolved into, you know, the underwear Olympics, or, you know, that's how it's known, the 40-yard dash and, you know, the different athletic drills and the testing and all that. But, you know, first and foremost, it's about the medicals. That's why it's most important. And that still holds true today. A guy like Nick Bosa, who is the favorite to be the first player drafted in this class, missed almost all the season with surgery in his abdominal area. So, you know, what will the updated medicals be on him? He's supposedly healthy and ready to go, but, you know, the medicals are really in depth. And, you know, so it's really going to tell teams exactly where he is. And then after the medicals, it's about the interviews. So, you know, as much as we talk about the 40-yard dash and that's what will get the headlines, teams care about the medicals and the interviews. And, you know, I think there's plenty to gain from the athletic testing and the numbers, and you just have to understand what you're looking for, you know, and that depends on the player, the position. If Kyler Murray decides not to go out and run, it's not a big deal. We know he's fast. It's not going to be a huge deal if he decides not to run the 40-yard dash. Now, we'd love to see him throw, because that obviously helps when you see these guys throw back-to-back-to-back in the same setting. It's something that, you know, there's something to gain from everything. You just have to understand the best way to use all the information.
We're talking to Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. The NFL sent a memo out saying they're going to allow some guys that that may have domestic violence or battery issues that have got in their background. They're going to allow them to come to the combine. You think it's a good idea or a bad idea by the NFL to say, look, we're going to let these guys participate?
Well, the rule itself is a terrible rule. And the only reason the NFL does it is because they don't want these guys being talked about throughout the week. You know, it's become a media event. You know, I was talking to Rick Goslin the other day, a longtime Dallas Morning News writer, best known for his mock drafts over the years. And he was at the combine in the early 90s, and he was one of seven media represented. Last year, there were over 1,600 media credentials for the combine. So, you know, it's a made-for-TV event now. All the headlines that come out of Indianapolis that week. The NFL does not want these guys with a violent crime in their past to be there, and that's what they're talking about. And that's really the reason why they do this. It's a bad rule because the combine is for, you know, the NFL should want the NFL teams to get to know these players more. A player like Jeffrey Simmons, who got in trouble 3 years ago, and it's documented on tape of he's striking a woman, in a fight. If I'm the NFL, I want my team to meet with this player because he's a first-round talent, and I want them to know what kind of player they're drafting, because the NFL is not going to stop 32 teams from drafting the player, not going to stop 32 teams from playing or paying this player. So best get them in at the combine so they can fully interview, fully vet these guys, fully understand the person. And I think the best example of why this is not a good rule is Jalen Ferguson, Louisiana Tech defensive end, who 5 years ago, before he was even in college, he was just out of high school, got into a fight at McDonald's and was charged with a misdemeanor battery. And, you know, he will not be allowed to participate at the combine because of something that happened before he was even in college. That, you know, he's a completely different person now, but because that's on his record, he will not be able to participate. And so it's just, you know, I understand why some people say, you know, okay, it's good. The NFL's standing up for, you know, what's right. But in reality, they just don't want those players with those past grievances there talking to the media and being on camera.
Yeah, they're not saying don't draft the guy. They're just saying we don't want the headline during the combine.
Exactly.
I always feel like when it becomes an event, because it's an event, you can watch it on TV, fans can still attend. Is it still open like they started a couple years ago?
Yeah, I believe so. They, I know they're. It seems like every year they're giving fans more and more access with what they can watch. You know, it's just it's really becoming a fan event. With they moved it from the stadium in terms of like the media access, the stadium to the convention center. They have a whole big kind of NFL experience type of deal where, you know, fans can come and you know, throw a football through a. You know, a tire, but it's much more elaborate than that. So, yeah, it's definitely become more of a fan event than it ever has. And it seems every year it evolves more and more. So, you know, who knows? Going to the combine this year, this will be, gosh, my 10th, 11th year. You know, it grows in magnitude every year, both in terms of the coverage and then also what they allow the fans to be involved with.
Dane Brugler covers the NFL draft and the combine for The Athletic. Is with us. Dane, you've been there for a number of years, as you point out. If I could give you access to only one component of the combine, and you were a general manager, where would you reap the most benefit from seeing or being a part of?
Without doubt, it's the medicals. You know, it's something that every year we get surprising news out of the combine about a kid who, you know, unfortunately his medicals were failed because of a knee injury his freshman year. And, you know, long term, there's questions about how long he's going to hold up. Jay Ajayi from Boise State is a perfect example a couple of years ago. You know, he was a second round talent, a guy that was going to be drafted in a top 40 pick. But because his knee was red flagged because of an injury when he was a freshman or a sophomore, it wasn't that he wasn't healthy now. He was healthy that day. He could go out and be a, you know, capable running back, but it was more about the longevity. And, you know, that knee might fail in 1 year or 2 years, who knows? Doctors couldn't say, but it was almost like a ticking time bomb. And here we are, Jay Ajayi's been in the league for, you know, what, 4 years now, and he's still doing okay. But it'll be interesting when he hits free agency and, you know, how that will affect him because doctors worried about the longevity. So the medicals, there's something that always comes up that we didn't know about, or like I said, in, you know, Nick Bosa's situation, we just need to be updated on, you know, what happened, what exactly was the injury, anything long-term. And, you know, you really just trust the doctors. You know, most teams use a 1 through 5 scale where 1 means, you know, he's perfectly healthy, no worries. 5 means bright red flags, can't draft him. And so each player is assigned a number, and anything 1, 2, 3, you know, that's pretty good. But 4 or 5, that's when it doesn't matter how much you like the player. You have to trust your doctors and your medical staff, your trainers, and if they're given a 4 or a 5, they're off your board, and you know you're moving on to other players.
You got Nick Bosa, and I read your recent piece on the edge rushing class here and how loaded it is. But Nick Bosa as a number one pick, is there a risk there? I guess there's a risk every time you draft.
Sure, and you know it's something where you can't predict certain things, especially with when you talk about the Bosas. You know, Joey Bosa, his older brother, who when he's healthy, he's an all-pro for the Los Angeles Chargers, but he's been dinged up through his career with different things, most notably a foot injury. Their father, John Bosa, was a first-round pick back in the late 80s. He only lasted 2 years because of injuries. And so how do NFL teams look at that, where, you know, Nick Bosa, he had an ACL tear as a senior in high school. Unfortunately, he missed most of his junior season with an abdominal injury. you know, how do NFL teams look at, you know, his past injury history, his past family injury history, and you factor that in? Because based on talent, I think Nick Bosa is the best player in this draft. He plays a premium position, and more so than just his athletic testing, he's gonna test fairly well. He's just so far advanced in terms of hand usage, understanding how to use tempo and nuance to break down the rhythm of blockers. He's just very advanced for a player so young. He's going to make an instant impact. He's scheme versatile, 3-4, 4-3, it doesn't matter. He's going to make an impact. But really, it comes down to the medicals and how comfortable you are, and that would be the biggest risk if we're talking about Nick Bosa at number one.
We look at quarterbacks in this draft, and obviously people in the state were tuned in to where Justin Herbert would have fallen, but was there any advantage for Herbert coming back in the class itself? Is it a deeper quarterback class next season versus the one that we're about to see drafted?
Right now, it seems that way, but so much can happen in a year. You know, who knows? Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, something could happen with that knee that he dealt with. You know, could have another knee injury, and all of a sudden, you're worried about him long-term. You know, Trevor Lawrence from Clemson, obviously not going to be in next year's draft. He's in a 2021 draft. So, you know, you just never know. It's a year ahead. It's hard to forecast that far out, but you know, it's funny. I was watching, you know, Dylan Mitchell, a talented Oregon wide receiver, the other day, and you know, you're reminded why Justin Herbert decided to go back to school, because he is so raw in a lot of areas. I believe he would have been the first quarterback drafted if he came out, but in terms of his best long-term path to success, I think going back made a ton of sense. Just being more comfortable, more confident in his skill set and what he can do. Seeing more reps at the college level, just being another year older, more mature, being ready to take on what it takes to be an NFL quarterback, because you're basically the CEO of a franchise as an NFL quarterback, especially the guys that are top picks and teams invest high picks in you. It's more so than just the money, but when you're pegged as a number one overall pick or a top five pick, there's a lot of pressure that goes with that. So for Justin Herbert, I think it made a lot of sense for him, and I think he'll be better for it in the long run. You just hope he stays healthy for a senior year at Oregon.
We're talking to Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. Before I cut you loose, Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, very different players. What do you think is going to happen there, and what can we learn in the combine that would help NFL teams with those two guys?
Well, with Kyler, first we have to see what he's going to do. You know, we don't even know if he's going to measure. I mean, this is a player who has taken advantage of every leverage opportunity he has had so far in terms of the baseball, football, and everything else. And so what will he do at the combine? Will he run? Will he throw? Will he even get measured? Will he say, you know, look, you guys know I'm small. I'm not going to let you guys put a 5'9 number next to me. So, you know, a hand size, that's part of it too as a quarterback. So we have to figure out what Kyler Murray is going to do. Hopefully, you know, if I could pick any of those three things, I'd love to see him throw. You know, we know he's small, we know he's fast, but I'd like to see him throw just, you know, next to Dwayne Haskins and the rest of the quarterbacks in this group. And then, you know, with Haskins, it's just being consistent. He's only a redshirt sophomore. He only has 14 starts under his belt. But can he be consistent from, you know, we know he can make all the passes. He has special arm talent, but just being consistent on outs, on downfield throws, on simple throws. And then just, you know, a big question with him is the lower body mechanics, the mobility. He's a little clunky in his movements. So I want to see him, how he performs in the short shuttle, the three-cone drill. You know, those agility tests that kind of measure the short area quickness. That'll help give us a better idea of what kind of athlete that he is.
Which of those two guys, if you and I are running a team, are we talking about with a number one pick?
Yeah, I'm putting my money on Haskins. I think his arm is special. I think that he can make not only all the throws, but make them accurately. And so I'm a believer in Kyler as well. I think he will translate to the next level. But if I had to put my money on one of these guys, I'm going to go with Haskins and his continued development. I think he has what it takes above the neck. And again, the special arm talent, that's what really separates him.
Yeah, and I look at Haskins, I think there's a lot of room for growth. And I look at Murray and I say, I think he's going to be a really exciting player and a fun player to watch, but I don't know how much more he can grow. I don't know what else he can develop.
Right, and I think that's fair. And like you said, he's going to be an exciting player. He's going to be fun, especially if he goes to an offense that you know, they incorporate options and boots and speed outs and just different things to utilize that athletic skill set. He has a chance to be a really good pro, but, you know, odds are I'll take Dwayne Haskins and feel just fine about that.
Did Russell Wilson open the door? Like, because I know that size-wise, I kind of feel like Murray would be getting beat up more if it weren't for Russell being in the league and having success.
It certainly helps. You know, Russell Wilson helped, you know, break down part of that stereotype. I think Baker Mayfield going number one overall helped break down that stereotype. So those two quarterbacks right there certainly helped. But at the same time, we haven't seen anybody like Kyler Murray, you know, 5'9". What is his weight? More so than the height, I'm worried about his build.
Yeah.
Because he's going to take hits. How does he bounce back? Russell Wilson, you know, Drew Brees, Baker Mayfield, those guys are 215 plus. If Kyler Murray comes in at 190, that's a difference of 25 pounds. That's a big difference in terms of body armor. And we know Kyler Murray is going to take some hits with the way he moves around. So the build, more so than the height, is more of a worry to me.
Dylan Mitchell, Duck fans wanting to know, where does he fit in this draft? And where do you see Mitchell?
I think he's right now viewed as kind of a third or fourth rounder, a borderline top 100 player. It's just a loaded wide receiver class, and not at the top in terms of top-end talent, but in the second to fourth rounds, there's a lot of players who are of similar skill, and you know they project well to the next level. And so the combine is going to be really important for Dylan in terms of running really well. You know, it should be in the four-four-five area. And then just catching the ball consistently. That was something that was an issue for him, just being more consistent finishing. The gauntlet is a drill for the wide receivers that you better have quick reflexes and reliable hands or you're not going to look good in that drill. So how Dylan Mitchell does in the gauntlet and then just how he runs could, you know, make a big difference in terms of his final draft grade.
All right. Have you gone through the combine? Have you done one of those fun things where you go run and do all the events?
No, I haven't.
Does that appeal to you?
I need at least a month or two to train so I wouldn't look just god-awful. And I mean, I'm not that young anymore where I can just get out of bed and you know, run a 5-1-40. I need a little bit of time to train.
I love it. All right, Dane Brugler, thanks for making time for us.
Anytime. Thanks, John.
There he is from The Athletic on the NFL draft. Gosh, if I'm Dylan Mitchell, I get the temptation. I don't blame Dylan Mitchell for going to the money. That's what you do. You go to college to set up your career. And if you're a football player and you're Dylan Mitchell and you think, hey, there's money to be made for me out there, I'm assuming he's going to be drafted. I got him a little lower than Dane has him. But Dane's the expert. He's saying third or fourth round. I think fourth, maybe fifth round. There's still money there for Dylan Mitchell, and I think he's the kind of player that will have a nice NFL career. But, gosh, chance to come back for another year at Oregon? I get it. Chance to get hurt. Not really going to probably improve your draft position that much. It would have been a lot of fun to see Dylan Mitchell with other receivers around him, because what happened at Oregon last season? Duck fans, back me up here. Beaver fans, back me up here. Every meaningful possession, every meaningful play, third and eight, where's the ball going? Look for number 13. I mean, you talked about making football simple. Coaches always say that. We want to simplify things. Oregon simplified things to the point where literally we all knew number 13 is getting the ball, and the defense is trying to stop number 13 from getting the ball. That's a simple game. So I'm curious to see what Mario Cristobal and the Ducks have done now with this class and a lot of talented receivers. And, you know, he's got a dozen receivers that he's just looking to see, can we get two or three or four guys that'll step up? It's going to be fun to watch. Coming up, Scott Ruick, Oregon State women's basketball coach. Alabama Adriana has been very quiet today. What's going on in your life? Fill us in here. Bring us up to speed.
I actually have a story for you guys.
All right.
So this morning at about 5 in the morning,
okay,
the fire alarm starts going off. I open my door. It's not the really loud fire alarm, but the one that's saying, warning, warning, please evacuate the building, blah, blah. So my roommates are all...
Question, how big is the building that you're in?
16 floors.
Okay, so it's a nice sized building. Where are you guys on the...
We're on 8.
Okay.
So I get out of my room. My roommates are all grabbing their stuff. We're about to walk down. I open the door to my hallway, and my hallway is filled with smoke. So I was freaking out at this point.
Whoa.
And I grabbed my laptop. I grabbed every electronic that I have that's portable that I can grab. I threw it in my book bag and I went downstairs. We grabbed the dog, went downstairs. Apparently, somebody had just sprayed the fire hydrant all down our hallway.
Oh.
It wasn't actually a fire.
You mean the fire extinguisher?
Yes.
They had sprayed it.
Yes. So there was residue on the floor. It looked like ash. There was smoke in the air. It looked like smoke, and it smelled really bad. So we were all freaking out, but apparently somebody had just sprayed the extinguisher.
I love that moment where you have to realize, what am I going to grab?
I had never been in a moment like that where I looked in the hall. There's actually smoke out there. Like, there's something actually going on.
This is it.
Yeah.
We've been. All right. So you go in your room, I'm going to guess. You got clothes. You got your electronics, probably have your hula hoop and some other things. You didn't take photos. You went laptop, phone. Is that what you did?
Laptop, phone, speaker, GoPro. That's it.
I love that.
That's all I got.
I have to put myself in that situation. What would I grab? Okay, I'd make sure all the kids are out. The dogs are on their own, okay?
The dog in this case was like our kid.
The dogs are on their own at my house. The dogs have a door. They could get in and out, okay? If they, this is where I go back to like Darwin's law of theory of evolution. It's look, adapt, survive, or it's tough luck. So if the natural selection is what I was trying to say, if the dogs are not smart enough to get outside during the smoke, they're on their own. Cause I'm getting the kids, make sure Anna's out. Then it would be really interesting. What do I grab? Do I take photographs?
I have a book bag in my closet with all my important documents, and I didn't even grab that.
I really recommend photographs. When I first moved here, when I was 19 or 20, I had a car fire. I was in the process of moving here, and had an electrical fire destroyed my car with all my photos in the trunk. And I can sort of remember the memories, but after, you know, I'm 40 now and they're real hazy. I don't have those pictures to remember. Always grab physical
photos.
Now
everybody's got them on their phone or in the cloud. Everybody's phones are in the cloud. But the bottom line, too, is I think I'm going to do this as a drill when I get home. I think I'm going to set the fire alarm off and I'm going to be like, we got to get out. Do you think that would be a good drill or do you think that would be traumatic?
I mean,
the house is on fire. We need to get out. It'd be like Dwight Schrute in The Office. You know? We gotta go.
Maybe let the kiddos know that you're gonna practice before.
What are you grabbing? I know what those kids will grab. The 4-year-old does it every day when we go to school. She's a hoarder. She fills up her backpack with a random assortment of toys. And I've discovered this morning the reason she's doing it is she doesn't want her sister to play with her toys while she's at school. So she's basically going, you're not playing with that, you're not playing with that, you're not playing with that. That's going in my bag. Thank you very much. Today her bag was like heavy. I was like, what do you have in here, a bowling ball? She's like, no, you need to put this in there too, Dad. This is it. So maybe I'll do that as a drill. In your household, you should do it as well. You know, the house is on fire. Gotta get out. Were you relieved? Like, how soon did you figure it out? Or did you go all the way downstairs?
Oh, no. We were downstairs in the lobby, but we live next to a fire station. So that's the good part. But everybody was just in the lobby from only our floor and the floor above. And because apparently it was just those that got the warning.
Do you think one of you guys did it to try to get the firemen over there?
Wait, what?
When did you guys set off the extinguisher to try to get the firemen?
It definitely wasn't me.
To the 8th floor?
Definitely was not me.
Oh, let's get the firemen over here. How can we do that?
No, but when we all got down to the lobby and my roommate was actually the one to figure it out. I think she knows people that work there, but we didn't figure it out till we were already going back upstairs.
One time, because I travel a lot for work, and one time those fire alarms that are in those bigger buildings are very sensitive. And one time I literally got out of the shower and I had my towel, you know, and I was drying off and I was kind of like flipping it around and it brushed against one of the fire things. I guess it was on the low ceiling, set the alarm off for the whole building. Everyone's like, what happened? I'm like, I have no idea. I just got out of the shower and the alarm went off. But There's another way to get... did somebody get in trouble?
Not that I know of, but I'm sure they'll find someone.
All right. Well, whoever did that, shame on you, but that was a good story. Scott Ruick, Oregon State women's basketball coach, is next.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.